some people are funny about sheets, like they don't want to sleep on other person's sheets, right? But
isn't everyone? I heard everyone was like that. Okay.
No, I mean, there are some people who won't even, you know, won't even entertain the idea of having strangers stay there because they don't want anyone else having sex in their bed, for example. So
yeah,
it's like, well, you can't.
I can appreciate that.
Sheets. I'm just talking sheets. Do what you want, but then change the sheets, for God's sake.
Well, yeah, but you can't be that precious, right? You know,
right.
People that rent the house, they're going to do what they do, and that's fine. But if you only want to have your, like, if you want 100% know that no one's had sex on your sheets before, even if they've been washed, then you have that put away so that when you come
out, your own sheets, yeah.
You can then, so there's the house that you have for guests, the way it's set up for guests, but then when you're in town, then you make it your own. And then when you're out of town, you make it as a guest house. So
do you both, I guess, Shun-san as well, do you both have some situation where somebody approaches you and says, okay, well, I'm going to be using the house, that just as an extreme example, and all throughout sakura season, all throughout falling leaf season, and once in the winter when there's good ski about, and the rest of the year, low season, can you rent it out for me? Like, do you ever say to a customer, it's just not worth my while to take on your property because...
Oh, I said sometimes, yeah. Because, well, it depends on the property, but depends on the location. But
yeah.
I think it's the main earning season, it's going to be like winter or summer. Then if it's too difficult, then I just say, okay, I just say first, this is difficult, but we can just try. And then, okay, try. But
that's so Japanese of you. And they don't get it, yeah, then you have to do it. Just say no.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. Now, right before we jump into today's episode, quick reminder that you can now pre-register and secure your discount. Yeah, that's right, discount. Early bird discount of somewhere between 10 to 15% on tickets for the Japan Real Estate Summit Autumn 2024 edition, which will be held in a bit less than a month in Shibuya, Tokyo. And of course, online, we've got streaming tickets available as well. Saturday, Sunday, 5-6 October, 2 full days of presentations, workshops, breakout rooms, Q&A panels with our experts, and what a list of experts that is. Emil Gorgis from realestate.jp, who's also a sponsor, along with innovatius.com. Tracy Northcott from Tokyo Family Stays, Blanca Kobayashi from Arc Reform, Matt Ketchum, the Akia Hunter from akiaz.io, internet phenomena Anton Warman, Akiamart founders Joey and Take, CPA Daigo Sato-san, Nick Woolsey from Japan Remotely, myself, less important, and hopefully at least one more surprise speaker to be announced. You can grab tickets for one of the days or both days, and of course a streaming ticket as well. If you can't make it in person, put in your details and pre-register today on summit.realestate.jp. We'll link to it in the episode show notes, and we'll hit you up with your discounted tickets as soon as they go live in a week or two. The discounted tickets will be gone by then, though. So pre-registering now is your only way to secure that discount. All right. So for today's episode, we've got a special guest star on the JREB, Japan Real Estate Experts panel. That's right. Same experts that you'll see at the summit. Join us. And we also had him with us on this recording. His name is Shun Matsuki, and he runs a startup by the name of Smart Inn. We'll link to their page in this episode show notes as well, of course. They're a company that provide remote management of short-term stay properties anywhere in Japan, or at least anywhere where they can get cleaners and emergency response staffers, as he'll explain in a moment. They also provide research on the feasibility of acquiring a short-term stay or hotel/yokan license for any particular property you've bought or are considering buying. And he talks to us about the entire process of applying for and getting the license. What exactly is the workflow that's involved from the initial licensing research and all the way to full business operations? How long does it all take? What's involved? We also talk about another unique service that this company provides, which is buying a turnkey licensed and ready to go short-term stay operation. Very attractive proposition, which he explains to us in more detail. And we then talk a bit about more macro stuff. Where and what are people buying? What is the official definition of an akiya? How to maximize yields using a hotel or yokan license? Who is the typical guest in the Japanese countryside? And what has been the effect of the pandemic on the short-term stay market and guest profiles? We then discuss the types of properties that tend to make the best short-term stay profits, the more popular locations for these purchases, and how exactly do automatic check-ins and check-outs even work? And then finally, we chat a bit about how to appeal to the international tourist market and what makes for a good Airbnb listing. Spoiler alert, it's not just a matter of having a nice property. There's a lot more that goes into it. So really interesting conversation with someone who is deep in the weeds of short-term stay operations day in and day out, like our own JREP member, Tracy Northcott, who did most of the talking on this panel, naturally. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Okay, it says recording. I think it's recording. The Japan Real Estate Experts panel is back in session or partial session. We've got Emil and Tracy who will introduce themselves in a minute, but we'll start with our special guest today, Shun Matsuki-san from Smart Inn, based in Fukuoka, startup city, yay.
Welcome.
He's been introduced to me at least a long, long time ago by Stephen from Airbnb, who was here on the podcast. I'm soon to be retiring from Airbnb here. By the time we publish this, it's probably not a secret, I think. And he introduced Shun-san as somebody who's really stepped into that white space of short-term stays in Japan and how they can be automated and outsourced to various places around the country. And so I'll let him do his own introduction. He'll tell us what he's been up to. Go for it, Shun.
All right. Thank you for so much for having me on your podcast. Is it podcast? Yeah.
It is. It's everything. It's podcast. It's YouTube. It's everywhere.
All right. Okay. So I'm just going to introduce myself. Hello. My name is Shun. I'm the founder of Smart Inn, the company that provides comprehensive support for minpaku and ryokan business owners or those aspiring to enter this field. So we assist with everything from license research to developing workflows that meet ryokan and the minpaku license criteria. We also offer smart check-in system installations and property management service. So that's who I am, and that's what my company does.
When you say short-term stay management services, I think one of the rare things that you do, if not unique, I don't know too many others that are doing it in Japan, is that you're at least trying to outsource management service wherever the property might be in Japan, right? Obviously, some minpaku local municipality regulations can make that difficult, but how do you navigate the remoteness of all of it?
All right, so we developed this software so that we can manage remotely. And basically, we use this software to manage remotely, and we find the cleaners and also the emergency support teams we're going to have in the local area, then we can manage the place remotely.
So there are a bunch of places where you weren't able to do that, I'm assuming, right? What are usually the things that will make you say, okay, no, we can't, in that location, we can't manage it?
Well, if we can't find the cleaners and the emergency team, then we cannot.
right, so that's it. That's sorry. Hi, Shun.
Hi. Sorry. Now introduce yourself. Sorry, I go right into it.
Now let me introduce. So hi, Shun. My name's Tracy. I've been a short-term rental host for about maybe 12 years now. Mm-hmm. And I'm mostly in Tokyo. So I'm the CEO of Tokyo Family Stays. And I have around 30 properties under management. Some are mine, some are arbitrage. So rental arbitrage. So that's like chintai, like commercial chintai. Some are I host for other people. I have a combination, and so I'm really focused on my on my customer base, and also guest experience is my jam. I'm all about like adding high level of hospitality, high touch hospitality, as well as really creating a full service for my guests. So I've written a book about this, and I've got another book on the way. And
in the weeds, like you, with the
cleaners. Yeah, I'm completely in the weeds. And so, you know, I've got a blog and I help people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm actually in my own business. This is interesting because my assistant and I today, we've been talking and we have pretty much analyzed every solution best in class around the world. And so we are all over the remote check-in with guests right now. So I've got a ton of questions. I've got a ton of questions for you. But I will let Emil introduce himself before we
He's also
we
a host. Or is it just former host now? Do you have any of those left?
I'm a former host. So I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. I help foreign families and locals buy a family home using Japanese mortgages in Japan. I used to be a host. I had about 12 properties that some I owned, some I was subleasing, but they were all on Airbnb since 20, I think I started 2015. So before regulation and then after the regulation and then COVID. But now I've gotten rid of that. And my focus is, that was always just a side kind of hobby and a side business, not my primary real estate business. But yeah, I have lots of firsthand experience in the Airbnb game, and even getting I think I used to use like a smart cleaning service as well, right? So you just connect them to the calendar and they'd schedule the cleaning and whatnot. So that was really good. And also
in Japan, is that a thing in Japan?
It was. I think they did they sell off, or I think they shut down the business, I'm not sure. But during that, it was another guy. I don't recall the name. It was like a smart cleaning service. So
it's not Zens, is it? It wasn't Zens.
I think the guy's name was Justin, the guy who ran it.
Oh, okay. So he was working with our other friend and
But yeah, so I've experienced a lot of sort of different Airbnb sort of platforms and whatnot. But I think now, like, I stopped that sort of during COVID, but right mm-hmm. now I think it's a lot more sophisticated. And I'm kind of curious, Shun, really about what the flow, how it works, because there were some interesting parts that you mentioned about your business, mm-hmm. which is you help with the is it even identifying properties or doing the due diligence? Can it be registered for Minpaku or a hotel license?
Mainly and, we do. Oh, I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah, and do the registration.
Mainly we do the due diligence first. Yeah. And for the finding the property, well, if I can, I do. I help some of it, but not my specialty. So I guess I ask Ziv for that.
Shun's been helping us with research on individual municipalities and individual properties, whether they are likely to comply and get the license or not. Obviously, nobody can say until people actually apply. But you do have, you say you don't research, but you do have a product on your website, which is, we'll find you a place, it'll look something like this, here's how much you'll pay, and it'll be Minpaku ready, right?
Yes. That's we're actually like now getting ready. I mean, I've been already sold one property, but now we're in the process of getting ready for another product that we can sell.
It's interesting for me as somebody who helps people buy properties, because you don't give them options. You say there's two classes of properties. It will cost about that much. It'll be a minpaku. It'll be profitable. Mm-hmm. Give us the get go, and we'll go find something like that, right? Like they don't have options. Like find me a nihakuman 2 million yen house and turn it into an Airbnb. You don't even get into that.
No, we just say okay. We just give the condition that okay, maybe 30 minutes drive from the Fukuoka airport and 10 minutes away from the nearest train station. And it's cost about 6,000 yen. I'm not sure in US dollar, yeah. But 6,000 yen, and you get yield for like 10%, like NOI yield for 10% and stuff like that.
So you're confident, that you can pull it off every time if the house is within that criteria.
Well, that yes, but I would say like, okay, 8 to 15%. We're not sure, we are confident. That's what we say.
Are you using any market dashboard tools, like AirDNA or Price Labs or?
We use that too, but it's not quite, different to what the reality, I would say. So I use it as.
Yeah, I mean, you and I can battle over this can get really, really nerdy and really, really techie, because the biggest question I get, and I actually help a lot of people, is they'll give me an address and I'll tell them, yes, you can, no, you can't, and then yes, you can, and here is what you'll make from it. And here is based on what 10 years of experience, 12 years of experience have told me, plus what these, what Price Labs tell me, as in, what's currently being sold, at what price, at what occupancy. And then I can dig into the listings and I can take a look at the listing and go, ooh, that host is not doing a good job. So you have, don't really take that particular host as the benchmark. If you raised your standards, then you'll be in this percentile, you'll be in the 75th percentile, you'll be in the 90th percentile, that type of thing. So
I love how experts who are added to their craft can actually put numbers on that. We just tell people it might do well if it's managed well, but we have no idea, and it's seasonal and it could be good and it could be bad. Like, it's a gamble. But you guys can actually put numbers on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I've got the tools, right? I've got the data tools, and I can really scrape and I can really, dig into an area and look at historically, even, last 3 months, last 6 months, obviously last 4 years is not representative of what the market is doing. But I can really dig it in. And it looks like I can send you a ton of people because they're always asking me, can you get my license for me? Can you do this? It's like, my life is too short to deal with Japanese, bureaucracy, but I can tell you how much it's going to earn and I can tell you how to make money off it. So that's probably where there's some synergy between us.
You guys are very different too. I mean, Shun's case, just by nature of being as remote as you are and trying to, encompass the entire country, I don't think you have the option to be hands-on, like come in and decorate the place and make it hospitable to particular family. Like you just get them rented out and try to manage them remotely. You can't be high touch like that, right?
Well, it depends on the customer. Like if they want us to do the decoration and everything, we do that too. And it was also about the strategy and do with the community. We do that too, but
then there are trips involved. You have to go there in person, wherever, and it might be. So that's when it probably becomes a bit expensive, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And are you providing the cleaners or are you working with existing cleaning companies that are out there?
They're working with the existing cleaning out there.
Got it. Yeah, no, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask, Shun, so what's your process flow, right? Like if I want to, use your service. So I invite you, I'm like, look, I want to buy an Airbnb property. Mm-hmm. Or I guess that's the very first one. Is it Minpaku or do you just look for hotels, the ryokan?
We research both. Whether the property is able to get the ryokan license or minpaku license, we can check both.
Okay, so we find the property,
yeah,
and go, okay, this property can be used for get a ryokan license.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, great. here's my money, let's buy it. Mm-hmm. And do you do the brokerage service, or you work with an agent to, or like Ziv, I guess, to do the agency side of stuff, right? I presume.
Yeah, it depends on the property and depends on the municipality. If the municipality policy is quite strict, and if I have to be on site, then it's sometimes it's easier working with another agency to do that for me. So I just do that. But if the municipality regulation is not that strict, then I just do on my own remotely. That's what.
No, you're talking about the purchase, not the management. The purchase of the property. You do that with the Fudosan, right?
Yeah, with Fudosan. I mean, yes.
So we bought the property, and now I say, all right, please go and do the, like, now we need to register it. And yeah. So you coordinate all the licensing and registration,
mm-hmm.
and maybe decoration.
Maybe decoration, yeah. Okay. And also like the workflow too, if they want us to. Like if they want us to create the Airbnb listing and the PMS site controlling system, we just install them too. And if they want us to manage the property, we can do that too.
Okay. Cool. And
you do that nationwide, so I'm assuming you work with different shihoshoshis in different municipality, like who actually goes there and does the registration, or can it all be done online these days?
It's Gyosei Shoshi we work with.
Gyosei Shoshi, okay, yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku, or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Do you operate on like a percentage of the gross revenue, or is it a fixed price, or what, or is there multiple different kind of structures that you have? That's, if you don't mind asking.
Mainly the revenue, like percentage of the revenue.
Of the booking, gross booking revenue.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the different services like the licensing and creating the listing and advertising, are those separate ones that you charge for separately, or is that all included in that?
Separate.
Okay. Yeah. And how much do you charge for those, for those other services?
For the research, it costs 20,000 yen, 20,000 Japanese yen, and for the
per property, right?
Property, yes, per property. Yes. And for the minpaku license, 20,000 yen, 200,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ryokan license in Fukuoka City, then 25,000 yen. And nationwide, 30,000 yen.
Okay, so yeah. 250 or 300,000 for the hotel license application.
Yeah, but, and that pretty much, you know, that's market pricing, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
yeah.
You know, that like really, you know, that's pretty standard across the country. That's what I pay for my she, or she. And,
yeah. And I think having the single point of contact in English, like you do around Tokyo, Tracy, that's the major plus for anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I've got a question, like how I know Tokyo, like I, you know, I live and breathe Tokyo. How are you finding the other markets? It's like, you know, is it still this golden triangle, or are you sort of seeing movement in, you know, more of it, more Inaka areas? What are you seeing right now?
Right now is more like Inaka seeing, yeah, Inaka.
So all the people buying Akira and you're making them, yeah nice.
And cool. Also, like, isn't it difficult to find property in Tokyo or Osaka or Kyoto? Is it? Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it depends on what
it depends on your budget. Yeah.
Your budget and your business. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're looking to buy, yeah, it's hard. If you're looking to rent as a chintai, as a commercial chintai, yeah. that's hard. That's really hard.
That's really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And mostly, are you mostly doing sort of standalone single family homes rather than yeah, got it.
I'm curious, a lot of your clients, are they getting akiya, like actual like cheap old akiya that they're fixing up, or are they just buying a regular house?
It's both, actually. If it's an inaka, then they prefer to buy akiya and then renovate and then make it a short rental. But if it's in the city, like Fukuoka City or Tokyo City, they buy new houses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The lines are blurring for me after having gone out to all of these different cities and looked at so many vacant homes. I don't know that there's a clear line when it officially, it's not official, turns from just a vacant home for sale into an akiya. You know, like somebody hasn't been living there for years, it's still just a vacant home. Or if it's not dilapidated, like shack in the woods kind of thing, they're all akiya, I guess, right?
Yeah. I've noticed that as well. Like I see lots of people on Instagram and they're talking about the akiya. My feeling for akiya is like, it's, you look at it and go, oh, it's dilapidated, no one lives here, they don't know where the owner is, it's overrun by trees. It's like, that's akiya. But one where someone's left and just no one's lived there for a few years, but they know who the owner is, it's listed on the market through a regular real estate agent as a standard transaction, and it's like, you know, 5 million yen, 8-10 million yen. Yeah. I don't call that an akiya. That's just an old cheap house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, some of them, depending on state of disrepair, I guess. But officially, they're all akiya the moment somebody no longer lives in them. So it's just a matter of who lists them and how complicated it is to get information and get a process done.
And what are you seeing as the timeline right now from like purchase or rent right through to actually opening the doors and having your first, you know, your first booking? What's that runway look like for you right now?
I guess
it all depends on a piece of like how long it takes, but what's your average right now?
It's average, it's gonna be like 3 months to half year.
Yeah,
like
that's what I'm seeing too. Yeah, 3 to 6 months. So yeah, no, it's good. Like I think you're in lockstep with what I'm seeing. So I'm just seeing what I'm seeing. I'm not, you know, it's good to know that you're also seeing similar. things.
I'm saying if Shun's company already has all of these boutique little pieces of services, they can flog your services, Tracy. Like fly Tracy all around the country. She'll come in and turn your place into the getaway for the family kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I am a very high touch in terms of like, I don't do a lot of cookie cutter stuff. I'm like, you know, when I'm working with a client, I'm like, what are your goals? Let me not just work on, you know, getting a minpaku up and running. Like, what's your business goals? Like, you know, I'm really into that as well. So I probably do too much. And I probably don't charge enough. But
that's really important, you know? It's like you have to know what the customer wants to, and it's same for making a minpaku too. It's like what the guest wants to, and yeah.
And so, who's the guest that you want?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Because it's not just like a lot of people think, oh, I'm just making an Airbnb, and that's a really quick way of being very generic and not having a point of view. Whereas And I'm thinking that Japan will go the same way that America will go, and it'll get very, very, it'll get oversaturated unless there is, I always tell people right from the start, like you need to have something that's a hook, that is something that is a, like people want to go and stay, and you're not just cheap accommodation. You yeah. are, you know, you are creating an experience. And so you've got, you know, and it's not a passive job. Well, I think if you do it passively, you're not going to get the revenue. I think if you're really wanting profit, you've got to be heavily involved, mm-hmm. or have a property manager who knows their stuff, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Go ahead. Yeah, thanks. I was going to ask Shin, what kind of clients do you have mostly? And just to let you know what I mean by that, are they mostly Japanese or foreigners? And are they looking to get a holiday house that they can use when they want, but also in the free time, it's not dead money and it's rented out? Or are they looking purely at just an investment that they'll never go to, it just gets a rental yield? What's kind of the main inquiries or clients you're dealing with right now?
The first question is, we handling mainly Japanese customers. Like I'd say like 90% of our clients are Japanese, and they want maybe half of them want them as purely as investment, and then half is they want to have a second home in Fukuoka or second home in Inaka. So they want to use for maybe like 3 months for them own, and then rest of the month they want to use as minpaku.
And that's good, because if they've only got 180 days, then that's a good way of having that, you know, making sure, because unless you've got a hotel license and you can't be in it for yield, like mm-hmm. it's impossible. I mean, I do a lot of minpaku and service department here in Tokyo, but I can do that because I have a lot of contract workers. There's a lot of digital nomads. So I can run a hybrid strategy of filling up those month to month and then using the minpaku to fill in the gaps. But if you're looking to really maximize your yield, there's only for vacation rentals, you have to have a ryokan license. There's just no other way around it. Yeah. So
in Inaka, we do like only like 50 or 40% of the occupancy rate, and we make a good yield because we put the high ADR. So that's why
what's an ADR? Sorry.
Average daily rate.
Thank you.
Average daily rate. So and people and like. They're getting those, the ADRs are, they're selling right now. So I don't know anything about Inaka, so you teach me. So are they selling?
Yeah, like Inaka is like, well, we always say like, okay, maybe like the revenue per room, we just want to aim for like for Inaka, Samman yen. And if we do that, we have to do with high ADR, like Juman yen about. And then. Okay.
So those are very fancy rentals, right?
Fancy rental, but consider that like this is a whole house, right? It's like a whole house.
Yeah.
People can fit like 9 or 10 people can fit. Then each of them pay just ichimayen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
done. Okay, so you're catering to groups and families, basically. Yeah. Most of your properties are like that?
In Inaka.
In Inaka, okay, gotcha.
And the people who are, I'm really dealing with the inbound tourist market. That's what I'm really focused on. With these Inaka properties, are they getting a domestic customer, a domestic guest, or is it still the inbound tourists that are booking? And I'm guessing just through Airbnb, right?
Mm. Yeah, but it depends on the Inaka. But I'd say there's 50% of them are domestic tourists.
Mm.
Tourist, and then 50% is an inbound tourist.
The more we can increase the domestic appetite for short-term rental, vacation rentals, it's only going to benefit the market overall. I think that's great. And if more Japanese hosts or more Japanese investors are buying, and then that then is really, really helping that, you know, increasing the, you know, the appetite, like I said, for, you know, for short-term.
Normalize it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, a rising tide rises all boats. Yes. Yeah? So I think that's fantastic that, but up until the pandemic, there was hardly any domestic, and I'm in Tokyo, I'm hardly getting any domestic customers anyway, but that's, I'm in Tokyo, so that's weird. But, you know, but in Inaka, yes, definitely having, you know, being able to cater to a domestic customer is the way forward, I think, for just Airbnb in general in Japan. So
I'm wondering, Shun-san, what kind of domestic guests are renting out 7, 8, 9 people sized houses? Like, are they families or groups of friends, or who are your guests domestically?
The family and the group of friends, like reunion friends.
Okay.
The house, whole house, and then they have fun together. Like, it's like,
that's nice.
Yeah. So
maybe commercial corporate retreats, you could market to commercial companies.
Absolutely.
And stuff.
But still only the one bathroom usually, right? Most houses, like, are you helping with the reform as well? Because most of these houses for 10, you know, 8 to 10 people have only got one bathroom, and that's challenging.
So normally we say, like, okay, at least 2 bathroom, and yeah, we just reform and renovate 2. So
got it. I suppose there's a lot of like older sort of pensions and older like bessos, especially out in the, you know, that are sort of geared up for that size. So
if you think the property has potential, installing a new bathroom, as long as it's in line with the same piping for the existing bathroom, if it's on the same drain line, it's under ¥1,000,000 to install a second bathroom, usually a second toilet. So it's not a huge deal. If you think the property is going to be profitable, it's worth it.
Yes, it's worth it. Definitely worth it.
So. And are you finding that people are spending some time on the design side? Are they, you know, are they, when they're reforming, are they putting some thought and intentionality into, you know, into a real modern Japanese style? Or is it, you know, what are people doing?
It's like they prefer to do the modern Japanese size, like using doma and, you know, the kitchen, the floors that are connected. But
you should totally send Anton their way. Anton in the Inaka. It's a whole new YouTube series. I can see it.
Yeah.
Which cities or which locations are really popping right now for the tourism? There's lots of movement.
Good question. Yeah, I want to know that.
I would say Fukuoka City is actually Fukuoka is in Kyushu anyway, because now, like, we in Japan, like the foreign guests, they are coming from mainly from Asia, East Asia, and they are from like Korea, not that many Chinese right now, but Korea, Philippines, and Singapore, Hong Kong, you know. So Fukuoka and Kyushu is close to them. So back in like 2018, 2017, they were willing to visit Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka mainly, but now it's kind of slightly changing to visiting the big city to more countryside.
My customers from Singapore and Hong Kong, for example, never even get to Tokyo and Kyoto and Osaka unless they have to these days. They just come in and stay around Kyushu.
Interesting.
Yeah, we get many Singaporean and Hong Kong.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily, ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties. AkiyaMart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off AkiyaMart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Actually, this is maybe for both Tishun and Zib. How is Okinawa as a destination either for investors or for the short-term stay market that you're seeing?
Do you have any properties there, Sean?
No, not yet.
we get asked about them a lot, yeah, but haven't pulled the trigger on a single one yet. I see the short-term stay market is very active there.
Yeah, it's very active, and it's also high competition, I have to say. Yeah.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, areas close to Naha City Central and obviously close to the American bases can be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of Okinawa is still not that expensive, but question is, will you get guests out to a little hamlet? I guess you could if you market the entire, that's the same conversation we keep coming back to when we talk about certain stays, is if you market the entire area that you're in and draw tourists there and not just the property itself, then again, it's very hands-on, but you could drum up some business. So I guess there's potential in Okinawa, even out of the central expensive areas.
Okay.
So how many properties under management have you got?
It's now, I think it's close to 50. I'm not quite sure about the properties number, but yeah.
Nice. Well done. Now, can I pivot to the auto check-in thing? I have questions. So my assistant and I, we've actually just spent the last few months looking at all of the best in class around the world for check-in systems and so on. So right now you're only connected with Beds24, is that correct?
That's correct.
That's the only PMS. Are you looking at doing some other like channel managers or property management systems, some of the international brands?
For now, no, unfortunately, only the Beds24.
How many people are using Beds24 in Japan? Because
They say like 3,000 properties they're using, like 3,000, I'd say.
Because Beds24 is mostly a hotel platform, right? Rather than a Minpaku short-term rental platform specialist. Well,
worldwide, yes, but in Japan, they recognize as Minpaku PMS.
Wow, really? That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. I am gonna grill you. I was gonna grill you on some of these. So,
this is solid gold, Tracy. Don't stop.
Don't stop. Well, look, I don't know why you guys keep turning off your cameras. It's like,
because you guys have the center. The thing is, there are a lot of people in our listeners' database who are definitely Airbnb operators and Minpaku owners. So even though they don't speak out much and ask about questions, like except AirDNA once in a while, I think there's a lot of people finding value in this. So please continue.
Okay. No, but okay. So my question is, so your website's you have an English website at all, or like you're really targeting Japanese customers, aren't you?
I'm a Japanese customer right now.
Got it. Okay. But the actual smart in, you know, the
I'm the only one base. Bothering him. I'm bothering him with clients, but he's basically Japanese focused.
Right. But the smart in, you know, the interface and the dashboard and everything that's only in Japanese, right?
It's only in Japanese.
Got it. But what about the guests? If the guest is showing up to the interface that they see is only in Japanese too, right?
No, they can change to English, Chinese, and Korean.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, that's good. That's good. Because yeah, you're just making it easier, making it sort of frictionless. So
I got a question. So what you're saying is your clients are basically at the moment Japanese, but what you add to the picture that a lot of operators don't is you give them exposure to the tourist market, right? Because you're giving check-ins, check-outs, and interface for the guests in a bunch of languages, not only in Japanese.
Not only Japanese. For the guests.
And if they have an emergency support phone line, somebody to answer them in English as well?
Yeah, in English.
Okay. That's a big selling point, I think, for the Japanese market.
But when you're helping, you know, with your property management side, are you also creating those Airbnb listings and everything in multiple languages?
In multiple languages, yes.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's really important if you're trying to help hosts, if you're trying to help people, you know, reach that market. Yeah, that really does need to be. Because I've said, look, and I look at Airbnb listings all day, every day, and there's some awful ones out there, just awful, and it's such a shame for me, because you know I know that these hosts are really eager, and they're, you know, they're honest, and they're doing their absolute best, but they really, that like I just want to help them with their marketing, because they're, you know, they're not optimizing their listing, they're not getting the right guests, they're, you know, they're probably having horrible, you know, a mismatch of a line, you know, misalignment of the guests and the product. If you're not marketing your product well, if you're not telling people what they're actually buying, then you're going to get yourself into a lot of trouble, because people will be disappointed. But but then also you don't want to oversell. You want to tell exactly the truth, but you also want to like attract the guest who is going to most appreciate what you're selling. So yeah, this is just me and my soapbox.
that's a really important thing. You need to the balance, right? I mean,
exactly. Well, and this is what I do as well. I actually, like, people pay me to look at their listing and help them and like redo their listing, and people pay me to help them with their marketing, because, you know, they've spent all this time making a beautiful property and having all this gorgeous hospitality, but their photos are rubbish, or their listing copywriting is rubbish, and then they're not getting the return that they deserve based on the quality of their product. Because if they don't have great photos, they're, you know, people are going to bounce off. And as we get more and more hosts in the market, the competition is going to, you know, you've got to have your marketing on point. So
I think the Inaka is a bit untapped from that regard. Just now there's like 1, 2, 3 listings per municipality in some of these outlandish places that people didn't get to before. So there's a very good chance to get in there and set standards for the market, I guess, before it gets busy.
Yeah, but you also have to communicate your value proposition too. So you've got to communicate, you know, if you're going to charge those high prices, you've got to communicate why it's valuable to the person who's buying it, right? And, you know, yes, your property might be worth $1,000 a night, but if you're not selling it, you're not going to sell it. So it's you've got to wear all the hats when you're a small, you know, when you're a small host. So
what are most of the most of your clients who are Japanese, basically, how involved are they? Do they just say, hey, here's the house, get money for me? Or are they more involved in how they want it to look and how they want it to feel? And I know Tracy's got her experience with the foreign owners, and I guess there's a bit of both, but how are the Japanese like? Are they more hands-on? Or
they're like, okay, first, like, the beginning, they say like, okay, please just do whatever you want to, and I want to get the revenue,
make me some money. Yeah
make some money. And then when we get like, okay, when it's get better, get more customers and then getting better, then the owner always say like, okay, how about if we do this and this, this? And then I say like, okay, no, it's okay, like, just leave me alone, I can do it. I get better than you.
So what kind of wacky ideas do they have?
Like, well, they say like, okay, what if we put this appliances to this and this and this, and they just say like, they want to
swimming add pool in the middle of
furniture and stuff. They want to add the furniture and stuff, but I said, okay,
yeah,
if you put too much furniture on the in the room, they can't open the suitcase, and so it's
really move around.
Yeah, It's like, but they say like, okay, it's maybe better to put more furniture or more like, yeah, they just want to invest more and more so that they think that they can get better yield. But actually, it's not realistic. It's not realistic.
So. What about the people that have holiday homes? Do you ever, I guess this question goes to you, Tracy, too. Do you ever, like the people who have a holiday home and then rent it out when they're not using it, you sometimes have to tell them that, hey, folks, you got to move the furniture around. You can't leave stuff like that when you're leaving the house. Like, is there any friction there?
Usually not, because if I only take on people who get me, who trust me, who know that I know what I'm doing. So I work, all of my clients are magnificent. And I'll tell them, you know, your sheets are getting a bit shabby. You need to spend a bit of money here, or that bed's getting a bit, you know, you need to replace that bed. And
might be comfortable for you, but not for people who are paying for it.
No, it's, yeah, they're away, so they don't see that stuff. And so they just trust my judgment. But I'm also pretty strict about who we put in the houses too. I'm more about higher price and lower occupancy, because I think that's a better return in terms of profit. You know, you get less damage, but then you also need to decorate it well. You know, you can't just, you know, get something that has been sotai gomi and then expect to be charging, you know, $1,000 a night. You can't. There's too much competition, and guess the market is too mature now. You know, you can't have knives that are blunt and scratched up old sauce. I mean, you can, but you're not going to get, you know, you're not going to get the prices that you want. You know, hosts have, like, owners have to be prepared to keep up a certain standard. But then when they come to town as well, they want to have nice stuff too. And I always suggest to people, when you come to town, have a locked closet, put your stuff in the closet, stuff that you don't want broken, the stuff that you know, even have a second set of sheets, so that when you come to town, you know that they're your sheets and you haven't had some rando, whatever. So some people are funny about sheets, like they don't want to sleep on other person's sheets, right? But
isn't everyone? I heard everyone was like that. Okay.
No, I mean, there are some people who won't even, you know, won't even entertain the idea of having strangers stay there because they don't want anyone else having sex in their bed, for example. So
yeah,
it's like, well,
I can appreciate that.
I'm just talking sheets. Do what you want, but then change the sheets, for God's sake.
Well, yeah, but you can't be that precious, right? You know,
right.
People that rent the house, they're going to do what they do, and that's fine. But if you only want to have your, like, if you want to 100% know that no one's had sex on your sheets before, even if they've been washed, then you have that put away so that when you come,
it's your own sheets. Yeah. Yeah.
You can, so there's the house that you have for guests, the way it's set up for guests, but then when you're in town, then you make it your own. And then when you're out of town, you make it as a guest house. So
do you both, I guess, Shun-san as well, do you both have some situation where somebody approaches you and says, okay, well, I'm going to be using the house, that, just as an extreme example, and all throughout sakura season, all throughout falling leaf season, and once in the winter when there's good ski about, and the rest of the year, low season, can you rent it out for me? Like, do you ever say to a customer, it's just not worth my while to take on your property because?
Oh, I said sometimes, yeah. Because, well, it depends on the property, but depends on the location. But
yeah,
I think it's the main earning season, it's going to be like winter or summer. Then if it's too difficult, then I just say, okay, I just say first, this is difficult, but we can just try. And then, okay, try. But
that's so Japanese of you. And they don't get it, yeah, then you have to do it. Just say no.
But if it's not worthwhile, then I just say, okay, that was difficult to do it. So it's
not
better.
Worth it for you and me.
Yeah. Yeah.
The hardest one I have, actually, so there's a couple of guests who come at the same time every year, and they block off because we have calendars, of course. They block when they're coming, they block off their own calendar. I have one or two, which is some trouble because you know, oh, I'm going to come last minute. And it's like, well, I have guests booked. And they said, no, no, you have to be. And like, so I don't work with those people anymore, but that's happened in the past. Like, you know, my house, you know, kick them out. And like, okay, that's fine. I'll find them somewhere else. But that makes it a challenge when I'm selling something in good faith. I need really very clear boundaries on what's available and what's not.
That is screw with your host rating instantly too, right? Now, if you suddenly kick people out the day before they're supposed to move in.
Oh, I won't do that. And, you know, or there are some places that I know that I can't book unless I've called the owner first because they haven't updated.
They might suddenly.
They might. So I just know that I'm not automatically going to take a booking unless, you know, and unless I've checked with them first. So. Because, you know, family drops in or whatever. So
Well, I just ask owner all the time. They use the booking engine for us too. If yes. they want to use, then just use the booking engine. Just book.
Yep. Same as a guest. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yes. But special booking engine for them.
I was gonna say, do you get them to pay?
No. I hope, but yeah, no.
Oh, look at you.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com. And his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Oh, look, I charge my mother-in-law, so don't you worry. When she comes and stays, I charge her. But no, I have it back to your like little like check-in thing, because that's always such a beast with the, you know, getting everyone's details, you know, getting everyone's check-in information. Are you able to sort of collect passports on the spot, or what? And you're able to collect things like email addresses on the spot for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody or just the main booker? What are you doing for that?
You can choose with our system. You can choose with everybody or just the main guest. You can choose both, and right. We call everything. So the basically like why I just invented this system is that I searched every check-in system and everything, and I couldn't find the best one. So I just said, okay, I just make it my own then. So previously the ICT check-in is like was only possible using machines installed at the facility, you know. But now it is, you know, now with our system, it's possible to use the guest device for check-in. So
all online. You don't have to install anything on the site.
You can just have to put the QR code in front of the door, Then the guest use their own smartphone to check in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, I've got 30 places, so, you know, like, I'm not sure if you have an at-scale pricing. I mean, these prices that you've got are great if you've got one to two properties, but someone my size, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but
that's a challenge because that's a lot.
Oh, they charge per property, do they?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm just comparing the with the ones that are abroad as well, like, you know, the international ones. I'm just, you know, I realize, but the ones from abroad don't do Japanese, so, you know, there's that. Yeah.
Can I ask, you know, you're talking about some of the dramas or issues you had before, but what are the hot properties you've got? Like, I'm sure you've got one or two that are just, you know, they're always booked out, crazy ridiculous prices, super hot. So where are they located and what?
Yeah, success story. Give it to us.
What's just the hottest property you got? Like, if I can just keep one, this cash cow's baby, which one would it be?
The one is in Fukuoka City, like close to airport, close to the city center. That's the one house. It's whole house property. So we renting out as Airbnb, short-term rental. This property is like all the time, but the occupancy rate is 90% almost.
Yes.
Yeah, 90%. Yeah. ADR is like about, I don't know, 10 yen. We aim to 5 yen to 10 yen. Yeah.
Where is this one? Sorry, I can't see that one.
It's in Hakata. It's in Fukuoka.
Oh, okay. Lovely.
Wow, nice. How many guests usually stay there?
Six to eight.
Oh, nice. Okay, good.
Keep
choice.
Telling us family, Tracy, you keep telling us that family and groups are where demand is at, but people don't listen. Here's the proof in the pudding, folks.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's like, oh, you know, small studios, yes, they have, they're a lower barrier to entry, but, you know, it costs the same amount to manage, you know, to manage the guests from guest acquisition right through the whole thing. It costs the same amount to manage a guest's booking.
And you're getting $100 versus $1,000.
You're getting $100 worth of $1,000. So, and also at that level, there's just so many, like the prices are really starting to drop. But there's not enough at that higher end. Sorry, I shouldn't say that because that's where I live. But really, I think that end of the market isn't fully realized yet. I think there's a lot more growth.
I think that's the thing worldwide. I'm trying to organize a family reunion in Cyprus now, and we're facing the same thing. Like when we're looking for something that'll house the tribe, there's not that much out there.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's not because it's everyone's nervous, like, oh, you know, it's such a big investment to get, you know, a 10 bedroom house or a 9 bedroom house, but you're out there on your own, you know. Yeah. Yes, it is a big investment, but there are groups.
All the niche. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
It is, you know, but you've got to have some, you know, you've got to have the courage to go into it. But I think that I think it's worth it. So that's where I live right now.
I've got a customer now selling, I can say this now because it'll probably be sold by the time we publish, but he's selling a Nagano onsen resort, like full building with like I don't know, 15 rooms annexed with another like 6, 7, 8 rooms and 2 complete contained guest houses for like groups/families. And somebody like you, the two of you, could do wonders with a place like that. I'm just imagining it. It's all run down now, but yeah. All right, I think we're just about at our hourly mark. Any added comments or questions to Shun-san before we let him go?
Well, yeah, how many people are using this? How many people are using your check-in service?
I don't know the people, but I think 50 to 100 companies they're using right now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
As in owners, property owners, you mean?
Yeah, property owners and the companies they use.
Okay.
They
so some property. Might have multiple, like,
yeah, multiple,
you know, multifamily dwellings. Yeah. Hmm.
So servicing tens of thousands of guests, I'm assuming by those numbers.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for your time, man. It was really good to get into the nitty-gritty of your market, new people, that actually know that stuff.
Well, I wish you all the best in this market. It's really, you know, like I'd like to, you know, hang out and do some, you know, maybe I get a lot of people. I'd like to, you know, pass them your way. I think you can really help them. Is it because, you know, I'm just sort of one person. It looks like you've got a whole system where you can, you know, take them from like from an idea right through to execution. Whereas
you're hands-on in Tokyo, definitely taking places up to the next level. Like at the very basic, I see like you guys passing on Tokyo and rest of country customers to each other. That's doable.
No, I mean, I get a lot of people just saying, oh, I like the idea of having a place that I can go to. And it's like, well, I can't get you there. You know, when you're at that point, then I can help you with my consulting or with my optimization or with my revenue management skills and all the rest of it. But taking people, and there's a lot of people who are really interested. And if anything, I probably talk a lot of people out of it because it's not as easy as it sounds, right? I'm going to buy a place in Japan and I'm going to make it into an Airbnb. But as Shun has said, it's 3 to 6 months before you from actually getting a place to actually taking your first guest. And you have to be prepared for that. And it's a lot of hoops to jump through. You've got to get the fire, you know, you've got to get your fire certificate. You've got to get the safety certificate. You've got to get all your ducks in a row. And it's not cheap. And I talk a lot of people out of it, actually. I'm just trying to be realistic about what your revenue expectations will be. Yes, there's money to be made, but it's not passive. And that's what I tell a lot of people.
The purchase side, too, just like Emil was saying, like once you start looking at 6, 7, 8 million yen, which is maybe a normal property in relatively reasonable condition, that's when it starts to make sense. Like, the ones out in the woods for 2 million a pop that are like coming, you know, crashing, falling apart of the seams, unless you're going to be doing it yourself, DIYing it and knowing what you're doing, they're not the bargain that you think they are. So please.
Well, I think even Anton's place he's doing in Shinjuku area now.
Mm-hmm.
Nagano area, yeah. I think even that, he said at our presentation, I think the total was coming to over 20 mil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's like in like Nisenman Yen, there's no, like I get lots of inquiries and people want an Akiya in Tokyo. And like, no, that's not doable.
No.
Or a place, Airbnb, that's under like, you know, 20 or 30 million yen.
Yep.
I don't think it's really doable in Tokyo because for that price, you're not in Tokyo. You're very, very far. Anyone coming to visit Tokyo is not going to want to stay 90 minutes outside Tokyo. You can't do it. You need to like 80 million yen, you know, or 60 million yen plus at least, I think. And that's if you can even register it for Airbnb and a whole bunch of due diligence stuff that I think Shun does, which I don't get into.
Not that it's just
practically and marketing wise too, there's a big difference between making it livable for you and the family to come throw your cots in and just have a night on the town versus making it appealing to guests who will actually pay money to rent it out, right? It's not the same kind of renovation you're talking about.
Correct. Yeah. Completely different. But yeah, I like people are still learning about it. I think they come in with a genuine curiosity, say, oh, I want to buy a place, and I can not have dead money. It's a valid revenue model, but in practice, I think their expectations and the cost, and that's with everything. The budget, nothing comes in under budget. Whatever you think your budget is, just go.
Double it.
double it to find something realistic that can be both a great holiday home and also great, you know, short-term stay potential. You want something cheap in the middle of nowhere, you're not going to get anyone's coming to stay, you know, out in northern part of Saitama in a place that was really cheap but is great for Airbnb. You know, you want that? Come to Shimokitazawa. It's going to cost you 100 million yen for a property that can be in Airbnb. But
it sounds like Fukuoka is the place to be, I think. Like, Fukuoka.
It hasn't been for a while.
But even... you know, even looking at places, you know, along like along the beach, you know, the Chiba beach properties.
Chiba Prefecture is ripe for the picking. There are some beautiful places down there.
Beautiful places. Anton and also my friend Naomi has had like a lot of success out in Chiba, like along the beach areas. You know, Atami is looking really nice right now.
I think Joey and Takeo were doing Chiba next, a surfing, like their first house was a surfing hotspot, and now they're planning to make another one.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, we'll see them. We'll see them soon. They're coming to town, yeah. So we'll catch up with them. But yeah, there's some really great places outside, and even in the ski fields. So around sort of the Cortina, you know, not right in Hakubara and not right in Nozawa Onsen, but like in the areas with that can service the in the Alps that can service those areas. People are buying some really nice cottages, renovating them, and actually having a really good business alongside. So yeah, but now that also the Shinkansen has gone all the way over to Kanazawa and then down, there's some, I think some of that part of Japan is going to open up soonish.
Right, well, for development. Well, okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, but I'm not sure how far down it goes. So Kanazawa, the Shinkansen now goes further, so I don't know how far it goes now. So yeah,
all right. Well, thank you all for your time. I'm sure you all have better places to be, but this was very, very insightful. Thank you very much.
Lovely to meet you, Shun. Let's meet up offline. So
yeah, thank you. Shun,
great meeting you, mate.
Thank you. Jumping on. Right.
Bye.
So there you have it, Shun Matsuki of Smart Inn. Awesome to talk with folks who are deep in their craft like Tracy and he is. And we'll link to his website and social media profiles in this episode show notes, of course, again. So feel free to reach out and connect with him directly if you're interested in the work that he does. And we'll also link again to the Japan Real Estate Summit's pre-registration page, which is, again, the only way to secure those early bird discounts on your tickets. We know that you love what we've got cooked up for you this time around over this weekend, 5-6 October, Saturday and Sunday, in person or via streaming, more speakers, more workshops, more networking time, and more people, at least. That's been the case with every event so far. And people are really what this event is all about. Aside from the speakers and the knowledge that they share, it's all about meeting like-minded buyers, investors, professionals, property enthusiasts like ourselves. And that's what gets us so excited about this event. So jump on to summit.realestate.jp and secure your discounted tickets today. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!